Hello and welcome to Landwise, Promoting Sustainable Crop Production, a podcast series about sustainable ways to grow food in New Zealand. I'm Georgia O'Brien, Extension Coordinator for Landwise based in Hastings. Landwise has been around since 1999, helping farmers and growers to develop and test new practices through on-farm trials and extending cutting-edge research to the farm or orchard gate. Through our podcast series, we are bringing the insights of lead researchers, technologists, and farmers to listeners from all over the ag and hort industry. Each month has a theme, with guests joining us weekly for discussions. At the end of the month, we'll have them back as a panel to talk together and respond to your queries. This month, we're looking at strip tillage and cover crops, brought to you by our platinum sponsors BASF, Hawke's Bay Regional Council, Vegetables New Zealand, and Processed Vegetables New Zealand. Today I'm talking with Alistair Holmes from the Foundation for Arable Research about cover cropping. Alistair is the Technology Research and Extension Leader for FAR and has many years' experience trialling new farm practices and cultivars and sharing that knowledge with arable farmers all over the country. Alistair, thanks for joining this week's podcast.
No problem.
Great. So we were introduced to the basics of a cover crop with MRF a few weeks ago in the Reducing Nitrogen Losses from Vegetable Cropping series. Do you want to do a quick recap of the definition of a cover crop and why we grow them?
MRF did an excellent job, as always, and he defined cover crops quite well. He said that a cover crop is effectively any crop that is grown in a system that is giving a service rather than being sold for cash reward. So that's quite a good, simple definition. People will hear different terms around the cover crop space: cover crop, catch crop, relay crops, all sorts of different terms. But ultimately, they come back to being a cover crop if they are a crop that has a function other than being sold for cash.
Right, that makes perfect sense. So, I have a feeling this might be an it depends answer, but what's the best cover crop to use?
It depends. you picked it. Look, and I think it's a really good question, because we do get people coming to us and saying, what's the best cover crop? And it does depend. It depends on a number of factors. First factor is, where are you in the country? Obviously, the cover crop that's going to work in Northland could be quite different. It's likely to be quite different to a cover crop that works in Southland. And we certainly find, most of the work we've undertaken is in the Waikato, but we have also found that even in Gisborne, the cover crops that succeed there can be quite different. The other question that's really important is, what crop are you coming out of before your cover crop? And then what crop are you planning to go into after your cover crop? So we've done some work with some cropping farmers who grow different crops, including maize and vegetable crops. And one of their key considerations is they don't want to plant a cover crop species that has the potential to host pests and diseases that would then be a problem for their following cash crop. The next it depends question is all around timing, and when are you able to establish this cover crop, and when do you want to terminate this cover crop? Because some cover crops will perform very well when planted early in the season, and some will perform poorly if planted later in the season. So some crops that work well when sown in April, if sown in June, do not really grow much dry matter before they need to be terminated in the following spring before the cash crop is planted. So the answer, it depends, is correct. And there's no simple way to pick a cover crop suitable for your system without working it through on a case-by-case basis.
Yes, so you need to be fully aware of your niche situation within your rotation and climate, and probably specific crops as well.
Yes, absolutely. And we started doing this work looking at cover crops. I was keen that we did a single species work, and my colleague Dan McDougall said that we should be doing mixes of cover crops together, and he was right. And the reason is quite often if you plant a mixed species together, one or two of that mixed species will do really well, and others in that mix won't do so well. And what that means is that the crop species that do well do the heavy lifting, so to speak, and fill in the gaps for the other species that haven't performed well. The danger of doing a single cover crop species is if conditions aren't good for that single species, you have a total failure.
Right.
So it's certainly something to consider as well.
So doing those mixes probably allows for a bit of co-benefits as well with that diversity?
Yes. I mean, the anecdotal evidence is that that's the case, that there's symbiotic benefit. We haven't been able to measure that, and certainly unclear on how that can be measured, but there's certainly a body of evidence globally that having multiple species gives increased benefits over just having a single cover crop species.
Right, but if you can't predict the exact season that you're going to get, it's always good to reduce your risk a little bit by having something varied.
I think it certainly is. I mean, if you plant three or four species and two of them don't do well, well, you've still got others that are doing well. So it certainly can reduce your risk of having a failure, because often, obviously if we're talking about winter cover crops, which we often are in a summer crop rotation, is if you sow your cover crop in mid-April or later and you find it's a failure 4 or 5 or 6 weeks later, it's very late in the season to look at re-establishing. So you often don't have the opportunity to re-establish because of the season, the time of the year, but also obviously the cost of re-establishing a cover crop is expensive.
So to follow on from that, how have far and growers established cover crops so far, and what's been your successful ones and maybe not so successful?
Well, I think, you know, I'm based in the Waikato, and the predominant cropping system in the Waikato is a summer crop of maize cut for silage, and because of the nature of that crop, a lot of the crops are cut predominantly in the March, April period, and following those maize silage crops, most growers go and direct drill a winter crop, generally an annual ryegrass in, which tends to establish very well in those moist and still warm conditions in March and April. Now, a lot of growers don't consider that annual ryegrass planted and grown over winter is a cover crop, because they will be grazing it or harvesting it for feed. But it does serve a very important function. And so that we're lucky that we have a base system up here that already includes a crop that is undertaking some of the roles of a cover crop, so that's near benefit. In that case, it's quite easy. They go, the growers go in following a maize silage harvest, generally with a direct drill, and sow the annual ryegrass seed and immediately following the harvester, and generally good establishment. The ones that we're sort of having challenges with and spending a bit of time scratching our head around is, how can we establish a cover crop in a maize grain rotation? So maize grain tends to be harvested anywhere from April through to June, or possibly later, and has two factors that make it very different from maize silage crop. The first is the date of harvest. So generally, rather than harvesting in March or early April, they're harvesting in late April, May or June. And the second one, and this is a critical one, is the amount of residue left on the surface. So following a maize silage crop, you effectively have a bare earth surface with a few bits of residue sticking out of it, whereas in a good maize grain crop, you could have anywhere from 10 to 20 tonnes of dry matter left on the surface. And so that makes establishing a cover crop quite a different technique.
Mm.
So because of the issues around establishing cover crops following maize grain crops, we've been looking at ways of establishing cover crops either before the maize crop is planted or while the maize crop is growing. So we've had two pieces of work there. One is that we've looked at interseeding cover crops into established maize crops, And the second is the possibility of growing a perennial or long-lasting cover crop that we then sow the maize into. So starting with the interseeding of cover crops into established maize crops, people have been doing this for a long time in New Zealand. So you hear stories of people who have flown on grass seed into a standing maize crop, or near Hamilton here, a grower flew on mustard seed. And what we've noticed is the success or failure of that system depends largely on rainfall following application. So if you fly your seed on and you don't get any moisture for several weeks or a few weeks, you get a very poor strike of the cover crop seed. However, if you apply your seed on and then get rainfall or possibly irrigation, if you've got irrigation in the system, you can get an excellent establishment of the cover crop. And if that crop is applied, flown onto the crop, the maize crop, from V5 stage onwards, even though it establishes, it doesn't compete with the maize crop because the maize crop reaches canopy cover quite quickly after the cover crop is sown, and therefore there's no real competition until the maize crop starts drying down, at which point the cover crop gets a bit more sunlight and kicks on.
Right, so then when the maize is harvested, it can really pick up and start taking up the nutrients that might still be in the soil and maintaining the structure and the biology going on.
Exactly, and that's the aim, to try and get the head start. And if listeners want to, they can go onto the FAIL website and look at our research summary booklets over the last sort of 4 or 5 years that have got results of trials undertaken looking at sowing crops during the maize season. They haven't been flown on, but the next part I'll talk about is the interseeding. So, yeah, as I said, the idea is to try and get the cover crop up and growing so that, as you said, when we hit harvest, they're already established, ready to add the benefit. The method that we're putting more time looking into is the interseeding of cover crops. So that is effectively, once the maize crop is up and established, sowing the cover crop in a reasonably conventional manner between the rows of maize. So in 2016, when we sort of first started toying with this idea, we bought a old Aitchison tine drill and pulled a number of the legs off and moved it so that it had legs in between the maize row spacing, and established. So we're basically sowing, instead of the 16 runs of the drill, we were sowing 9 runs of the drill, and that was just sowing in between the maize rows. And we played around with establishing the cover crops at V5, V6 stage, and had really good results. So in that situation, we were using mixes of different types of clover, tillage, radish, mustard, vetches, all sorts of things. And we were getting it was a good way of establishing a cover crop so that after harvest, it was ready to go. So that worked well. And in the time frame from 2016 to now, there's been a large number of tools, of machinery that is available that can sow seed in between crop rows, in this case maize, but also in between other crop rows. So a number of the manufacturers have identified this, and they're effectively, that have the correct spacing to sow seed in between established crop rows. So that's a major change. But also what we're seeing, and this is really exciting, is we're seeing a number of growers who are figuring out their own methods to do this. So some growers have pneumatic side dressers, which blow fertilizer into behind tines that go in between the rows. And so they're adapting those to be able to sow seed. And then other growers that are just setting up very simple systems based on a few tines and a seed supply to sow in between the rows. So it doesn't need to be complex to get that cover crop seed sown. It's essentially a matter of getting it into the soil in between the rows, getting a bit of soil cover over it, and then getting adequate moisture to it to germinate it.
Yeah, And those stories you're talking about with growers adapting machinery that they already have sounds pretty typical of New Zealand farming, making do with what you've got.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think they're pretty typical of farmers globally. I mean, in 2018, we hosted a gentleman from the Wessex Water Company in the southwest of England, and he had contacted us because he was carrying out his Nuffield scholarship looking at establishing cover crops following maize grain crops, because they were looking at a catchment that fed into the Poole Harbour that had very high nitrate and very high phosphate levels. So the growers there were not allowed to grow maize grain crops if they didn't have a cover crop in over winter. So nothing like that to drive innovation. I was lucky enough to visit him on a Trimble research fellowship later in 2018 and visit some of his growers. And one grower had developed this really low-tech system of sowing where he was just blowing seed out from a small pneumatic seed box that I think had actually originally been a slug bait box. And then he just welded some chain on some pieces of bar that he attached to the back of the tractor that effectively just chain harrowed the seed in. Now, in England, they can probably rely on more moisture than we can in most of New Zealand, but for him, that worked well. So innovation is a key part. It also brings into part brings into the conversation a really important thing that I think will hold back the use of cover crops, and that is around the cost of establishing them.
Right. So
if you wanted to go out and buy a specific cover crop establishment drill, I imagine you'd be talking up near $100,000. And I can't see too many growers being able to justify that capital expenditure. So adapting what you already have makes good sense. The other one, and this is a really big issue that we're trying to get our head around and change, is the price of seed. So we have undertaken research on cover crop species and mixes, largely irrespective of their cost from a scientific point of view. But we have planted mixes that have been several hundred dollars per hectare for the seed. And it is unlikely to be viable for crop growers of arable crops to undertake that sort of operation.
Mm.
In the States and Canada, the growers of maize and soybeans generally say they want to put in a cover crop for less than $10 an acre, which works out at seed of about $40 a hectare in New Zealand dollars. So we have to figure out a way that we can get the cost of seed down while being able to put in the cover crops. And to that end, some growers are either sourcing seed direct from other growers. So if they're planning to grow a cover crop of a cereal, they might know a grower in Canterbury and source seed directly from them. That has an issue that we've started to see some weed species popping up in places that we haven't seen before.
Yep.
So you have to be careful about the biosecurity aspect of bringing in seed that's straight off the combine and hasn't been dressed to sow as a cover crop. And then other growers, and this is something I think will increase in use, is other crops have been growing cover crops and then harvesting them for seed for their own use. So that's certainly an interesting way of doing it and hopefully bring the cost of establishment down.
Mm. So are there any other issues that we haven't touched on that growers should be aware of when choosing cover crop species or mixes?
Yeah, I think there's a few. I mean, the first one is around herbicides that you've used in your cash crop rotation or system, and if you've applied a residual herbicide in your cash crop rotation and then plant a cover crop species that is susceptible to that herbicide, you won't have a great success. So certainly something to consider before planting. Planting is do you have a residual herbicide down, and is it likely species that you're looking to establish, because a lot of these cover crop species are very closely related to certain weed species, so it's certainly something to consider in that respect. Another key one to consider, depending on what crop you're growing following your cover crop, is do you want to be planting a species that is related to the cash crop that you're going to follow your cover crop with. So if you're planning to grow a legume as your cash crop, you probably want to avoid planting a legume as your cover crop, because it may provide a green bridge for pests or diseases to come into your cash crop. And that's particularly something that mixed growers who grow arable crops and vegetable crops in their rotation consider. So that's certainly something to consider.
Right. So I guess that goes back to Murph's point as well of maintaining that diversity throughout the rotation and trying to mix up those plant families and chemical groups as well.
Yes. So certainly, obviously, mixing up your chemical groups is another issue and goes in best management practice. But certainly, the opportunity to rotate your types of crops, and including cover crops in that, is an opportunity too. So, you know, following, say, a pea crop, it may be a good opportunity to grow a oats crop as a cover crop to take up excess nitrogen fixed by the peas or left over by the peas, but also you've gone from a broadleaf to a monocot, and that gives you different weed control options. We've certainly seen a rapid increase in the interest around cover cropping, and I think primarily it's been driven by the change and the increase in focus on water quality and how having paddocks bare or fallow for periods is becoming less acceptable, and particularly over winter when there's the likelihood of having intense rain events damaging the soil and moving sediment into waterways. So we're seeing a rapid increase in the interest of these cover crops. So it's certainly an opportunity for growers to try their thing, and we're certainly seeing a number of growers who are trying novel methods, and I think both Landwise and Farr would benefit from hearing from growers who've tried novel things that work for them, because it certainly adds to the knowledge base and gives us an opportunity to share that information with other growers.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, well, thank you very much for your time today, Alistair. It was great to hear your insights on cover cropping and thinking about all of those different factors within the farm system and crop rotation to maintain your effective cash crops and profitable cash crops, but also incorporate cover crops for those soil benefits and water quality enhancement.
Excellent. No, thanks for inviting me, Georgia.
The Landwise Promoting Sustainable Crop Production podcast series was brought to you by our sponsors. We appreciate the generous support from BASF, Hawke's Bay Regional Council, Vegetables New Zealand, and Processed Vegetables New Zealand.